Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
I'll show you this website, astronomynotes.com, Tone.
The Earth is inclined at an angle of 23.5 degrees to the plane of its orbit. And because the direction of the inclination does not change, sometimes it's tilted toward the sun and sometimes away from it. I don't know how that would that help you with the moon?
No. It doesn't make it.
All right.
No. Now you are shrinking, so the angle will increase because
that
you're now lower to the ground.
That is a great point.
That's true.
This is General George Washington, and you're listening to the Tony Kornheiser.
I found the moon this morning. I found it. It is almost full. It's about a day from being full, and I found it this morning, I'm happy to say.
Yes, our NASA correspondent emailed me yesterday and said he'll see it. It'll be up at 4:30 tomorrow morning.
So I saw it.
Glad it worked out.
We are live at Chatter, where we're serving breakfast starting at 7 o'clock in the morning. We're at the corner of Wisconsin Avenue Northwest and Jennifer Street Northwest with David Aldridge and Tori Clark. Michael Kornheiser, Nigel is here. Running the board. Let me just address this early and stop it. We're not going to talk about what happened in Las Vegas. There's nothing I can say that's going to be smart enough to help you in any way. We're not. This is an entertainment show. That's a desperately sad and horrible situation. And I mean, I'm aware of it. Didn't talk about it yesterday. Not going to talk about it today because that's not what you come to this show for. What you come to this show for is craziness about numbers. Henry Gadelsky,
it looks like.
Doesn't matter. From Rockville, Maryland. Thank you for all the years of amazing entertainment. My dad had me read your columns and listen to you since I'm about 8 years old. Nearly 30 years later, we still love to listen and talk about your show. As promised, here is the magical receipt from Trader Joe's for $123.45. $123.45. Michael, That's a great bill of sale.
Did you look at the list of items they purchased?
No, what did they purchase at Trader Joe's?
The carrots of many colors.
Carrots of many colors?
Only Trader Joe's could come up with a name like that. Well, so precious.
He was there for hours to get that number right.
We got
with the carrots.
One more pack of gum.
Get the bell peppers.
Just married Claire Sophia Rainey and John Pelczar Wright, who writes, "Dear Mr. Tony, honestly, at no point did we consider inviting you or any other big to our wedding. That fact notwithstanding, I wanted to send you our wedding announcement and solicit money for our honeymoon set for next June. You and any other big or any other little listening can support the trip by contributing to our home fund at, well, we're not going to do this, but it's Jack Wright, and that's very funny because somebody might actually send him money. And yesterday, Seth Gittleman from Silver Spring gave us a George Washington bobblehead doll. He's an employee at Mount Vernon. We are proudly displaying that. I'll get to the Monday night game in a second. I wanted to just bring one thing up because I have homeowners here, and this is very important.
Ready.
I was out in Delaware over the weekend. I come home from dinner one night, and I find parked in front of my house. In front of my house, a white SUV with Maryland plates. Clearly not somebody who's a permanent resident or they'd have Delaware plates.
Was it somebody singing Puff the Magic Dragon
no,
inside?
No, it strikes me that
this is a non-zone street, for the record.
I'm just setting things up.
We have to give full
I'm
context.
Setting things up. He or she, this car is parked in such a way that I cannot, my house is not that big. I cannot, if I park behind it, I am halfway across my own driveway. Mm-hmm. If I park in front of it, I'm halfway into the neighbor's house. It is strategically parked so that it is the only car that can park completely in front of my house, not this person's house. It seems to me that this person is staying, renting the house across the street because there's a bunch of people in that house, and we know the people who own that house. You know, Alan Pegg owned that house. Alan Pegg Carter owned that house. I know I don't have the rights. I don't. I have no legal right to make this guy move or do. I mean, it's not like though I want to, I'm not going to take a hammer and smash his windshield. I'm not going to leave I'm not going to do anything like that. But how? I have no legal right, and I am burned at this beyond anything I even can imagine. I cannot tell you. Michael knows this because he's lived with me for so long. I cannot tell you how much this offends me. Your thoughts.
I almost got into a fist fight with a guy for this very thing. This very thing. Yes, because we had, and we went and got the street zoned because people were doing this. And it's the most annoying thing that you could possibly happen, have happened to
you. I'm irrational about it.
Besides someone actually breaking in.
Two questions. Yes. Late model SUV?
A Kia, one of those Kias, white Kia.
Why don't you Why don't you park in your driveway?
I ended up parking in my driveway, but I
That's not the point.
I felt I was forced into my own driveway. I felt I was forced onto
and
my own.
And the car wasn't blocking your driveway in any way.
No.
Back off.
No.
I find it so easy to yell at you about this parking situation, but as a recent homeowner, I find myself patrolling our little strip. There's three spots in front of our house.
Oh, my God. He's passed it down.
And if someone tries to shrink it to two, it bothers me. So what I started to do, I go outside with the hose.
Put a cone.
I go outside with the hose and just say, this hose can reach your car. So just be prepared when you go to pick up your salad or go to your yoga class.
You might have some stained windows. Just wait till little Bootsy is crawling around and walking out in the street. And you will want cars parked on your street because that slows the traffic down.
I want them parked there, but I want them to respect the neighborhood. I want them to realize that
the neighborhood.
This car sounds like it was parked neatly. It sounds like it was parked very neatly.
That's not the point.
It was parked so strategically that I could not access the front of my own home.
What if they just pulled up late into the evening and realized nobody's on this street and didn't even realize that they had parked in such a way that it had shrunk the street size?
No, well, it was there for a long time. Yeah. It was there for a long time. It was there the next morning.
My neighbor used to let the air out of their tires, and I completely endorsed it. Completely endorsed it.
Don't know what happened here.
The other thing I wanted to talk about is I've noticed, I mean, I'm up and I'm walking the dog really early. It's dark. I'm up by 5:15 walking the dog. Mm-hmm. People jog. They still jog because even though it's cooler, it's not freezing yet. I have noticed within the last few months, more and more people when they jog are lit. They're wearing something on their arms.
Understandable.
Or they're wearing like a miner's hat. Mm-hmm. I saw a guy today. His sneakers were lit, totally lit. What do we think of this?
I'm fine with that. They're vulnerable. You know, joggers are vulnerable.
I don't light up my whole sneakers, but I have these wonderful things that kind of slip around the back of your heel, and they light up.
So you can be seen by cars
and
stuff
like
that?
Yeah, and I hang one on one of the dog's collars.
This is for visibility. You're not saying that they're wearing cool apparel.
No. I think it's
not lit.
But
like
you know what it led me to believe? If there was some way that we could light up deer. If we could light up deer, our lives would be a lot easier because deer run out. Deer run out and you run into deer.
Well, on our street, just a few mere blocks from here, there are so many deer and they don't run. They own the neighborhood.
No,
sometimes I'll be going down the street at 5:30 in the morning and there will be two or three deer walking down the middle of the street.
Yeah, exactly. That.
And I will gently hit the horn, and they'll look behind me and give
That's
me the little deer fingers and just say, mine.
Yeah. All right, let me get to the game last night. Kansas City wins a very close game. Full disclosure, I made the half. Redskins looked great early in the Monday night game. Yes. Kirk Cousins, 2 weeks in a row, national stage at night for Sunday, then Monday, made himself some money. Had no picks last night, ran well, leading rusher on the team, 7 carries for 38 yards, tucked it, did a very good job, except once going left on a first down late in the first period, he got hit. That's okay. Yeah. He did well. This just in, Travis Kelce really good.
Yeah, well.
He's really good.
He'll let you know it, too.
yes, he will. So I was not confident. Mm-hmm. I think you'll remember that I said that I thought they would win one of the two games against Oakland and Kansas City. They won the first one, and they won it. They pounded Oakland.
Yeah.
So I didn't think that they were going to win this game. But Alex Smith played very well.
Oh, yeah.
Alex Smith. Kansas City scored on every possession in the second half.
Yeah.
And the Redskins' defense wasn't terrible because three of those were field goal positions.
Yeah, but they weren't good.
They weren't, no. Okay.
They
weren't good.
Well, they also lost about 14
players. Yeah, they did. But it seemed like even in the second quarter, the game kind of changed. I thought they got schemed a little bit. They did not seem to react well when the Chiefs, this is Andy Reid's MO. It's been this way his whole career. He will scheme you up. He'll put guys in different positions, and the Redskins defensively did not seem to know what was coming.
So this is the sort of end of the Tom Sula genius review at this point?
Well, you know, they didn't perform. They had a great first quarter, and then the rest of the game they weren't very good to me.
Redskins could have won the game. I would argue should have won the game. Josh Dotson makes that catch. It's a great pass. It's a great pass. Yeah. He's 6'5". Yeah. You put him in the position where he's got both hands on it, right? Supposed to catch it.
That's what, if you're a first-round pick, you're supposed to do. You know, I mean, you're asking me to do what all the great receivers in this league do, what Antonio Brown does, what Dez Bryant does, what
Julio Jones does.
They catch balls that are not easy to catch. That's
right
the job.
There. You're supposed to win. You're supposed to win that game. And if you win that game, let's just look at the Redskins. I don't want to make this too local an episode here, but it was the Monday night game. Kansas City at this point may be the best team in the league. They're the only undefeated team. They're 4-0.
Sure.
The Washington Redskins, their combined record of the teams that they played is 12-4. There's nobody played tougher teams than that. Not even Green Bay.
Right.
Didn't play tougher than that, and they're 2-2.
Yes.
So they're.
No, they're better.
They're better. Yes. They're better than we thought.
The defense is much better, and that's why I was disappointed, because I thought they would continue to dominate defensively, and they didn't. But, yeah, the Cousins throw, that's the best throw I've seen Kirk Cousins make, because that's not throwing.
Pressure on.
That's not.
Can't be intercepted.
The throw to Vernon Davis, that's an easy throw. He's wide open. That's an easy throw. He threw the guy open in the end zone in a tight window with the game on the line. That's a great throw.
Did you watch it?
I did. I watched into the middle of the third, and then I had to go to bed.
Right.
You know, I would feel a lot more confident going into the bye week without all these injuries and without seeing a season plus of this history of dropping catchable passes.
Josh, to me, that stays with you. Terrell Pryor caught one last night. Yeah. Josh Norman out for a while.
Ribs.
Out for a while.
Yeah.
So this is, I don't know. They have a bye week. Yeah. But they're better than I thought. And I thought Alex Smith. I'm partial to Alex Smith, and I don't even know why, but I like Alex Smith. I think that every time that everybody has said, oh, he's just a game manager, he's pretty good.
Pretty good.
He's gotten two different teams to the playoffs over time, and he's pretty good. And they look good.
Yeah.
Could I have a mom note for the game?
Sure.
Well, first of all, I was keeping my highly detailed notes doing show prep.
Oh, okay.
First quarter, surprisingly good. Level of detail there.
Yeah.
And I wrote in parentheses at least at the end of the first quarter,
right.
And then I quit taking notes.
Right.
But can I just say something about the field goal kicker for the Chiefs, the young guy who came out in his first
That's
game.
A bad spot.
Yeah, it's a tough spot. Did great.
And what they were saying as he was coming on, this is going to be a tough spot, first game, a lot of pressure. Oh my God. And then they kept the camera on him afterwards. That was just cruel. So I feel very badly for him. I hope somebody's hugging him today to make his
team
day
won,
better.
And he made three field goals at the end. And by the way, it is Scott Van Pelt's expression, bad beats. It's probably not his, but he uses it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
The last play of that game,
it's horrible.
The last play of that game, all the money flips.
Yep.
It's the last pro game of the week.
Mm-hmm.
You're trying to get even at some point. If you've got the Redskins plus 7, is that what it was?
Yeah.
Yes.
You win.
You're feeling great.
You are that happiest guy.
They're throwing a Hail Mary. I'm good.
That's right.
I said goodnight to Reginald. I said, all right, well, you won. I mean, you didn't win the game, but you covered. And then we woke up this morning because I spent the night at the zoo, and he was just furious.
That is
flinging stuff all over.
That's unbelievable.
Not so bad.
That has made that drove people insane.
Sure,
the last play of that game.
I don't bet.
Oh yeah,
that's why I don't do this.
You're no comfy. Control over that.
You're comfy. I got plus 7. I'm down 2.
Okay, game's over. Right,
I win.
Yeah.
No, don't win. All right, we will take a break. We will come back with Jason LaConfora. We'll talk about the NFL. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show. The Tony Kornheiser Show.
So this is the policy genius, Reid. This is about life insurance. Life insurance, as the copy says, isn't the most fun thing in the world to talk about, but it's really important. This is the part of the podcast where we mention life insurance. Now, don't go hitting mute, because this is even more important than it is tedious. We get it. Life insurance is confusing. It can take forever, and if there's ever a payout, you're not going to be around to spend it. But one company's making it a lot easier. PolicyGenius.com is the place to go to learn about life insurance, compare quotes from America's top providers, and save up to 40% on your policy. It sounds crazy, but that has never existed before. PolicyGenius has placed over $5 billion in life insurance. Their simple, user-friendly website helps you work out exactly which policy is right for you, finds you the best price. It takes about 5 minutes to apply for a quote. In fact, most Americans think life insurance costs 2 to 3 times more than it really does. If you're one of them, you stand to save more than you think. If you have any questions, they have a team of licensed experts waiting to talk to you, talk you right through it. No call waiting, no pressing 3, followed by the pound sign. You get actual customer service. And they don't just do life insurance. You can get health insurance. You can insure your pet, which I would say is a good idea. You can protect your income. And if you don't need to do any of that, they'll tell you. And if you don't need to do any of that, good for you. If you've been putting off life insurance or want to make sure the insurance you have is right for you, check out PolicyGenius.com today. You can save up to 40% just by comparing policies. The quotes are free. There's no sales pressure. There's zero hassle. PolicyGenius.com, P-O-L-I-C-Y, Genius, G-E-N-I-U-S.com. It is life insurance for the 21st century.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Brandon S. Bowker, singer-songwriter in Lexington, Kentucky. This is called Down Cemetery Road. Brandon has played with a bunch of bands. We don't know what band this was. We're pretty sure it wasn't the Beatles. But we don't know what band it was, actually. But we like Brandon Bowker. He's playing in Jason Lockenfora of CBS Sports. And I could start with, you know, last night's game. I'm not going to, because we've dissected a lot of last night's game. We'll get to it down the road. I think the number one story in the NFL so far, after 4 weeks, which is a quarter of the season, is how serious are the problems facing the New England Patriots on defense? How serious is this?
I think it's immensely serious. I think their season, I don't know that I can say it's on life support, but somebody needs to give CPR to that defense. And I think it's actually going to come down to it needing multiple organ transplants. So,
right. You
know, more so than just Bill Belichick and Matt Patricia taking turns pumping its chest and breathing air into its lungs. That may, you know, create marginal gains. It may help develop a pass rusher or two. It may improve them incrementally, but they are the worst defense in the NFL right now. And even the great Bill Belichick, genius that he is, and I say that not facetiously, but I mean, he is a football savant. He's a football genius. He's not a magician, though. He's not going to take them from worst defense in the NFL to playoff caliber defense just by scheming it up and you know, teaching fundamentals to a few edge rushers. They need a personnel overhaul. They don't have speed. They don't have linebackers who can cover. The corners who on paper look like they should be good, like Gilmore for all the money they're paying him, have not been good. And they can't stop the run. I mean, I've never heard of this before. They're allowing 5.1 yards per carry and 9.5 yards per attempt. I mean, that's utter and complete failure. When every time they hand the ball off, they get over 5 yards. And when opposing quarterbacks are completing, you know, are throwing it 10 yards in attempt and completing 70% of those throws for a 117 quarterback rating, you do nothing well as a defense. And they haven't faced murderer's row. You know, I mean, Drew Brees in week two, I'll give you that. But, I mean, Alex Smith had the game of his life, but he's having a nice season, but he's still Alex Smith. And you got Deshaun Watson in his first ever road start. And the narrative last week, right up until kickoff Sunday, was Cam Newton's done. Is he even a functional NFL quarterback, much less ever an MVP again? He was an MVP on Sunday.
See,
running
this
the ball down their throats,
yeah,
and throwing the ball all over the field at will.
So
no, they got a problem. And the answer to me, or the only attempted answer, and this is not a hot take. I mean, I wrote this column on Sunday. I believe it wholeheartedly. They need to trade Jimmy Garoppolo now in the next 3 weeks before the deadline to salvage this season, because they owe it to Tom Brady. Garoppolo is not Brady now. He never will be Tom Brady. And Tom Brady somehow is still in his prime at age 40. Give him a half-decent defense. Anybody else, Tone, besides Tom Brady and maybe Aaron Rodgers quarterbacking this team, they're 0-4.
Yeah, this is one of the points I want to make, and you've just made virtually every point that I could, is I sit next to Wilbon. And Wilbon, I think, represents the overwhelming majority of people who look at the Patriots, and they just say, well, Bill Belichick is a genius, so he'll fix it. Mm-hmm. And you want to go, no. You just can't fix it. It doesn't work that way. They've given up 128 points, which is second worst in the league. That's 32 points a game. They have allowed Tom Brady at 40 has a quarterback rating of 116 point something so far because he's great. The combined quarterback rating against the Patriots is 116 point something. They've made everybody else as good as the best quarterback of all time. And what am I going to say to Wilbon? You're an idiot? I mean, it's not that easy because Belichick, in this particular case, Belichick's reputation gives him, insulation against any criticism. I don't think they've got the people, right? They're not. They don't
have the personnel. He can't make guys faster. He can't. He can over time make them better pass rushers and put them in matchup positions to succeed more. But there's also an inherent pressure on that whole team now. Who know we got to score into the 30s to have a chance to win. That is increasingly difficult to maintain as the weather turns. As you're playing better defenses with the entire season on the line, I watch these games with my buddy Pat Kerwin, and we're sitting there, and I'm telling him about this column I did, and he's like, "Dude, I think you're right. Like, that's it." And he's like, "The Patriots win games, but they don't beat anybody. You know what I mean? If that makes sense, like, they're not physically beating anybody.
Right.
They're not exerting their will on anybody. They may any given week score more points than the other team." But they're not. This isn't the Patriots where they come out and get a 21-0 lead and then they suffocate you.
Right.
It is a battle for them against even bad teams, and that's they played three home games. That place is supposed to be a fortress. They should have lost all three of them.
They're going to go to Tampa Bay on Thursday, and they're going to lose. Tampa Bay is going to beat them on Thursday.
So?
I do. I think they're going to beat them. Don't you, Jason? I think Tampa Bay's going
to
beat them.
I think they have a very good shot to beat them. And if they do what everybody else has been doing, which is. Hang about 500 yards and 30-odd points on them, then you're sitting there with a 9-day window before you play again, and you're now two and a half, three weeks from the trade deadline. This is a guy who traded Richard Seymour. This is a guy who traded Jamie Collins when nobody saw it coming. This is a guy who traded Chandler Jones. I mean, this is a guy who's been willing. He's the ultimate economist. It's just
right.
about value and what I need right now. I don't care about the last name on your jersey and what you did before. Mm-hmm. If this makes sense for me now, I got to do it. They're not winning six Super Bowls with Jimmy Garoppolo. I got a newsflash for you. Whether they pay him $20 million to ride the bench next year and wait it out, I mean, what are we talking about? The guys, the mythology of this dude, it blows my mind. Like, and so they've built it up to where he's the savior, but he's still not Tom Brady. So he's not getting on the field there unless Brady gets hurt. Newsflash, Brady gets hurt with this defense, Garoppolo ain't saving the season. You've got a chance to get two or three young, cheap, impactful starters in all likelihood, plus a draft pick maybe for your backup quarterback in the midst of a historically significant dynastic run. And you're really going to tell me that, no, he's going to do nothing. He's just going to franchise this kid and give his backup $20 million next year. I continue to not buy that narrative.
Okay.
Maybe I'm on an island.
Let me go to two teams. I thought that the volcanic episode on Sunday was that the three best teams in the NFL last year all lost at home, Patriots, Cowboys, and Falcons. The Cowboys and Falcons are not coached by geniuses. Who's in more trouble, Jason, the Cowboys or the Falcons?
That's interesting. I more trouble. I have had a pretty strong suspicion that Matt Ryan would be more like a very good quarterback, but one who was beatable any given week without Kyle Shanahan versus the guy who was pretty much impenetrable last year, who
right.
was almost flawless and who was, in the first quarter of games, absolutely flawless, something like 15 touchdowns, no interceptions.
Ooh.
They're not that team anymore. He's not that guy anymore. He's on pace for 20 interceptions. He's flinging balls all over the sidelines. He's not in that same rhythm. He's not playing off that same script to open games. And Julio Jones is nicked up again. And so, Vic Beasley, he'll probably be back after their bye. But so I would be worried about them given the Super Bowl hangover and expectations. I thought both teams would regress from last year regardless.
Right.
But that, you know, they'd be on the periphery of the playoffs, and maybe one gets in, maybe both gets in, just depending on the strength of the league. But the Falcons really should have lost to Chicago.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't really know.
He hit him in the hands twice in the end zone. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, they should have been beat by Mike Glennon, who people, you know, could not wait to run out of Chicago a month into his regime, despite the fact he's going to make $19 million between last March and this coming March. Dallas, I mean, I guess you could say Dallas is in more trouble just because I have felt like there's something off in the culture there for a while, and that last year's magic carpet ride wasn't going to be duplicated, and the suspensions
suspension is coming.
There's so much going on there. There's always another shoe to drop. Somebody's being suspended. Somebody's being investigated for a possible suspension. Jerry's saying something crazy. Does it affect them on Sundays? I mean, maybe, maybe not. There's some people who like to think that these are just cyborgs, you know, who can just flip a switch and nothing else in their lives matter other than football for 3 hours every week. I'm not so sure that's exactly how it works. But I don't buy Dallas's defense. I never had. DeMarcus Lawrence is turning into a monster pass rusher, but I don't buy their secondary. I don't buy their linebackers, especially with Sean Lee already banged up. So I didn't think they were a playoff team. And if they do get to the playoffs, the coordinator, Scott Linehan, has to not try to, like, audition for head coaching jobs. He's got to feed Zeke Elliott the way the Steelers fed Le'Veon Bell last week with 40 touches. If Zeke Elliott touches that ball 38 times last week, they win the game. They rush for 17 times for 133 yards at the half. They build up an 8-point lead at home, and then they only run the ball 10 times in the second half, and a couple of them are like quarterback runs. I mean, if Zeke Elliott runs the ball 30 times, they win that game.
It's an amazing thing to me. What are you saving him for? He's going to be suspended. Give him the ball.
Yeah, and he's a running back who is troubled and who might not ever get a second contract anyway.
Well, give him the ball.
And you're playing a team that can't stop. I mean, the one failure of the Rams, despite this meteoric rise, is they can't stop the run.
Yeah. All right, let me get to something else. We did this yesterday on the show, and fascinating is a little bit too strong, but it's an amazing story to me. San Diego, well, they're the Los Angeles Chargers now. The Philadelphia Eagles.
It's a home game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nobody cares about the Los Angeles Chargers.
It was unbelievable. I watched that game.
Their own quarterback still lives in San Diego and takes a van to practice. Is there any and this is laid completely at the feet of Dean Spanos, the owner. Is there any league action planned? I mean, is this not ridiculous?
No, I know Hot Take Nation started this. I don't know where this conversation came from. Right about this time last week where they're going back to San Diego. They're not going back to San Diego. Like,
right. No, they're not going to do that.
The people there hate their guts, and they don't want to go back. And he would have to pay them to go back. Say what you want about StubHub and how it looks and the optics of that, and it is horrible. And as Philip Rivers said, we don't have a home field advantage. In fact, Philip, you may want to turn that car you have to watch film driving into like a minivan so you could throw maybe 20 fans in there and at least get some people who support the Chargers to the games. But believe it or not, the situation they're in right now, and I talked to a lot of other owners about this last week, people at the league office, they've sold something like 22.5 season tickets. And that's the highest ticket price in the league because every seat is intimate. It's close to the field. So they're basically at max capacity. You have to leave like 750 seats for Americans with Disabilities Acts. You've got various things you need to comply with. But from a financial standpoint, he's okay with where it is right now. The problem becomes in 2019 when Stan Kroenke builds his football Taj Mahal. And Dean Spanos, for the next 10 years, has to start cutting checks of $65 million to the other owners for his relocation fee. And whatever market there is there for PSLs, Kroenke, who has the young quarterback and all of a sudden the sexier team, he kind of sops that market up first. And he sops up the sponsorships first. And now you're the redheaded stepchild who's got to try to scrounge for what's left in a building where now you don't have the same cost certainty as StubHub. If you only have 35,000 people in there, then it is a problem when it seats 70. That's when the rubber hits the road. People tell me right now he doesn't have a business problem yet. He has a significant football problem that if he doesn't fix it in the next 12 to 18 months, could infect that business to a point where when they do move into that new stadium, he's completely leveraged. He's not in a position of strength, and he could be economically vulnerable then.
Okay. Plug your podcast for us.
Thanks, Toon. This week on the Be More Opinionated podcast, on the Google, on the iTunes and all that stuff, we don't know who we're going to bring in, Toon. We're in a quandary. You got to guess we should bring on. The problem is when the Ravens can't beat anybody, Ravens players don't really want to come on your show and talk about it, man. So I really don't know. I hope they win some games selfishly so we get them on the air. I don't know. I think Coleman's got to come up with a guest this week. I'm sure it'll be fun. We'll dissect the O's because they suck too. Check us out, BMOshow.com, Horn.
Thank you, Jason. Jason Lockin for our boys and girls. Absolutely. We will take a break. We will come back with news. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
And this is the SeatGeek ad. Buying tickets to sports and concerts can be complicated, but there's a better, simpler way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to live events. With SeatGeek's seamless mobile experience, you can buy and sell tickets in just two taps of your phone. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like seeing your favorite team, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get you the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed. You can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket. And with the baseball playoffs starting tonight and continuing for like 3 to 4 weeks, SeatGeek can help you get tickets to all the games Absolutely. That you want to see. Best of all, listeners to this high-quality pod get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app. You enter the promo code Tony today. That is promo code Tony for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
The name of the band is Rumble Edge Line. The name of the song is Walk With Me. Listen to this.
Okay.
Hello, dear broadcasters. Found your show recently. I'm a New Zealander living in Berlin.
Venom.
There we go.
But
twice.
I used to live about 10 minutes walk from the infamous cheese counter on Connecticut.
Nah.
I remember fondly digging in the discount cheese bin and fumbling through bad Spanish with the good cheese maestro. Here's a tune that my band and I recorded a little while back in Auckland, New Zealand.
How about that?
This is just signed Joe.
How about Michael, that?
If people from
He's a one-name guy.
If people from around the world want to submit music that we can play, how do they do it?
Please send your music to jingles@tonykornheiserhow.com.
And are we selling T-shirts?
No, we're not. Well, we are selling T-shirts, but there's a chill in that morning air. So you might like a Tony Kornheiser Show hooded sweatshirt.
Yes. Do we have those?
We do have them.
Fantastic. So, and how do you get those?
Well, there is always the button on our homepage, or you can just type in shop.tonykornheiserhow.com.
All right, Nigel has news for us.
I do indeed, Mr. Tony, and we referenced it, or you referenced it in the opening segment about the bad beat last night with the Redskins failing to cover in the final seconds of that game with the Chiefs. How did things turn out this week? I believe it was a great week for Chuck Todd.
Chuck Todd finishes at 5-2.
Woo.
Here's Chuck Todd's progression for those people into numbers. He starts out 2-5, goes 3-4, goes 4-3, just went 5-2 on the gift touchdown at the end of the Washington Redskins-Kansas City Chiefs game. So he's now at 500. 17-17. Reginald?
At 500 as well.
500, 6-6. He was 1-2. And James Carville, who finished 1-2, is at 3-5. James Carville got a bad beat. Mm. He had Vanderbilt plus 10 at Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Florida needs to make a one-yard first down at the end of the game to win by less than 10 points.
Right.
They are in control. They make this first down. They run out the clock. There's a minute and 10 to go. No timeouts left for Vanderbilt. The guy breaks through the line and scores a touchdown on the fourth on the third down run. And you see the coach, Jim McElwain, on the sideline saying to his assistants, "I'm sorry about that. I'm sorry about that. We shouldn't have done that." You see that, and he yells across at the Vanderbilt coach, "I'm sorry."
Right.
Say sorry to Carville, because Carville went 1-2 as a result of that. He had that game. He would have gone 2-1. So those are bad beats.
Yes, those were bad beats, but congratulations to Chuck Todd. That's obviously
Chuck Todd doing well.
It's great. LeVar Ball. is going to pull his son.
No, he did.
Yeah.
Pull his son out of high school.
Yes, LaMelo out of the Chino Hills High School and will homeschool him for the final 2 years before college.
I'm sure he's going to homeschool him.
I'm sure. And this was his rationale. He said, I'm not dealing with the coach over there. I'm not dealing with the administration over there. I don't want any distractions on Melo, so therefore I'm going to homeschool him and make him the best basketball player ever.
Do we have a mom question?
Well, it's not a mom question. But didn't he get the previous coach at this high school fired?
Yes.
Nice.
Yes.
Nice.
Yes. Yes.
So this
he wants to be the coach. It's pretty clear. He'd like to be the coach. And he's just the AAU coach now, but he'd like to do everything. He's not going to homeschool him at all, is he, David?
No. And do you think most people are really worried about this kid's academic instruction?
He's going right to UCLA for 1 year, and then he's going to the pros if he's good enough to go to the pros. Mm-hmm. Now, there is a complicating factor, because one of the shoes from the Big Baller brand is named for him, and he's got a piece of the, he may be ineligible to play college basketball.
I'll go to Europe.
But also, even as an athlete at UCLA, don't you have to have a certain academic record, and you have to take some standardized tests and things like that?
He's smart enough.
All the grades from LeVar's School of Knowledge transfer.
Yes. He got an A in this.
Home ec.
He got an A in that.
I'm available for tutoring.
There you go.
I'll work for shoes.
Online.
What else?
Jaromir Jagr. You remember him?
Yes.
I do.
He played back when the National Hockey League was first formed in 1832. He has signed a one-year deal. He's actually 45 years old. Second all-time scoring list, 1,914 points, signs a one-year deal to play with the Calgary Flames.
Okay, so let's talk about this for a second. From a local standpoint with the Washington Capitals, I remember writing a column urging Ted Leonsis to go get him.
Mm-hmm.
Ted Leonsis went and got him, and he failed. It's the only place he ever failed.
Right.
Was in Washington, so I take some responsibility for that.
Yes, you should.
He played 3 years in Europe, in Russia. I had no idea he was the second leading scorer of all time. Did you?
Well, no.
I had no idea.
He's 45 and still playing.
Yeah, how many years did he play?
He's still good.
Does that up?
He is.
He's still good. It's like when Ichiro bats for the Marlins. He's still good.
He can still hit.
He can hit. He gets a bat on the ball. He hits.
Did you see what Ichiro said?
No.
He said he'd like to play until he's 50 and actually think he probably can.
Probably could.
He also comes off the bench, and he's like a quality pinch hitter.
Oh, absolutely.
So, yeah. All right, what else?
John, am I going to mispronounce his name? Coppolella. He was the Braves, the Atlanta Braves general manager, has resigned, not re-signed, but he's resigned amid a Major League Baseball probe into international signing rules violations.
What is this?
They say there were improprieties in the way that he was signing international players, and I believe there's some story that he had at least a verbal agreement with a 14-year-old Venezuelan.
Some underage.
Circumventing the ways in which they could bring foreign players into this system.
Please forgive me if this sounds prejudicial. I don't mean it to sound prejudicial, but for years and years and years, there has been a sense that some of the Latin players have undercut their ages to be more attractive to scouts and more attractive to major league teams.
We call that the Mutombo rule.
Is that what that was?
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know the veracity of the ages that are given. I don't know if they're the same as here. I don't know the birth certificates. I don't know how it works.
It also
but he resigned.
It sounds weird to me just because I think this stuff probably goes on all the time. Yeah. How did this particular guy from the Braves get
brazen.
Singled
yeah,
out?
Yeah, it appears it was brazen. And the Red Sox were penalized about a year ago. They were prevented from signing any international players for an entire year for their infractions with it. Huh. So it does.
But again, if you present yourself as not the age you are.
But just still. If you don't, you got to check. And the Nationals, that's what took your boy Bowden down, right?
Yeah.
It's obviously rich. And the Braves, apparently they said, well, listen, his resignation was not some sort of plea deal with Major League Baseball. They're going to do their investigation. There might be fines. There might be some sort of penalty. But they're like,
we just said
we need to move on from him. I don't know if you saw this Vanuatu. Are you familiar with that island?
I have read about Vanuatu in my life. It's not Palau. It's not the smallest, but it's very small.
Well, you know that there's a threat of a volcano there.
I don't know that.
Yes, they've had to evacuate nearly the entire population of the island. How 11, many they have? 11,000 people.
Oh, that's smaller than Palau.
It is. Yeah, it's a very tiny island, but the volcano was spewing.
What's the capital of Vanuatu? Vanuatu City.
Vanuatu City. Yes, I believe that's it. Yes.
South Vanuatu.
BC.
Yes. Yeah, I went to Central Vanuatu High. So, yeah. Yes. Yeah. So they had to get everyone out there, and they were fleeing on everything from like water taxis to actually big boats. Everyone just like
where'd they go?
Water taxis.
Yes.
What's close?
Well, I think the Jersey Shore.
What's
Manhattan?
Close.
There's a 100-kilometer
water taxi. They can't keep going. They don't go across the ocean.
Catalina.
Yeah. Water taxi.
There's a 60-mile ocean trip to the island of Espirito Santo. And there's
60 miles. If this thing blows up, they're going to get hit too, aren't they?
Can we get a volcanologist in the house? Why, yes, we can. Brad Scott, a New Zealand volcanologist, said, actually, you know what? Everyone, it's okay. The volcano's stabilized. Even though there's lava still coming out, it's going to be okay.
Okay, good.
I would say that we might want a second opinion on that. Yeah. Oh, and I should point out, I referenced our NASA advisor. He actually has a name, Noah Petro. So he was the one that told me about
it. Is that it, or can we?
Well, no, we have one more story.
I want to get to Tom Petty.
And it's Tom Petty. Amidst the reports that, reports that he died, and they said, well, he's just in intensive care. He did, in fact, pass away last night at 8:40 p.m.
And David, your theory on that is?
It's okay to be second on that story.
Right, on somebody dying.
You don't have. I'd rather be second and right than first and wrong. So somebody was loud wrong, too, for a few hours.
We had yesterday, when we thought he had died at about 4 o'clock in the afternoon and the PTI show, I was talking about Tom Petty. And Wilbon said to me, I know his name. I don't know any of his music. And I said, you don't know American Girl? No. You don't know Won't Back Down? No. You don't. I Don't Want to Live Like Rick. No. Not, you don't. Free Fall. No. Don't know any of it. I don't know any of it. And then Wilbon made the claim that, you know, that he doesn't, this is, you know, only white singers he knows are crossover singers. That's all he knows. And because I started saying, do you know this guy? Do you know that guy? So you don't know Paul Simon. He says, I know Paul Simon. Don't do this. So we go back and forth. And I said, my position was, and that's why I'm glad David is here.
Because I'm the black guy.
Exactly. My position on this was that Tom Petty had sold 100 million records over 30 or 40 years. And I said that if there was a black singer of a comparable stature, I would know that person.
Mm-hmm.
And Wilbon named a couple. And I said, of course, I know him, or of course, I know her. And then Wilbon named a couple of people that I had never heard of at all.
Mm-hmm.
One was Howard somebody. Do you know Howard somebody?
Fine.
You don't know. But one, he said, I'm going to name
Howard somebody.
I'm going to name a white singer who is in R&B, tell me if you know Tia Marie.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, no, I don't know Tia Marie. And I was forced to concede.
Tina Marie.
I don't even know Tia Marie. I was forced to concede Wilbon's point
she's
in
from
this.
From here.
I was, oh, she's from here?
She was from here. She's no longer with us, but yes.
Oh, he didn't tell me that.
Yeah.
He wasn't up to date on her, on her demise.
Yeah.
So I'm going to you on this. Do you know Tom Petty?
Because
it took you a long time on the Rolling Stones.
No, that's just dumb on your part. It's stupid. I know I'm on Wilbon's. Of course I know who he is. I know a couple of his songs, but no, I'm not. I wasn't as big a fan as you probably are.
I was a fan. Mm-hmm. I thought he was very good, although I met him once and it was unpleasant for him. And unpleasant.
Was it Larry David unpleasant for him?
Well, he's an odd looking fellow.
Mm-hmm.
He was really, really pale and
very
slight. And he actually looked like, there are some videos where he looks like the Mad Hatter and he actually sort of looked like that.
Right, don't come around.
And I walked up to him to compliment. Who doesn't like compliments? He doesn't. I walked up to him and he just turned. He just walked.
He gave you the Larry David.
He wasn't a big PTI fan.
Well, he wasn't any kind of a PTI fan.
By the way, I can only imagine the producers, the people behind the scenes at ESPN, watching Michael Wilbon and Tony Kornheiser. Kornheiser trying to be black, Wilbon trying to be white. I'm sure they are just thrilled when you guys have those conversations.
Well, no, we didn't have it on the air.
Oh, okay.
Oh, no.
Well, you never know.
I want to know who this Howard guy is.
It wasn't Howard Eskin. I just was unfamiliar with his name. But at one point he said, do you know Ray Parker Jr.? I said, oh, get out of here. You know, I know that. You know, I know that. No, Rick James.
See,
come
the,
on.
This is what Rick I try James. To tell you. You. This is the thing that black people have to deal with. That everybody, because you all know Tom Petty and love Tom Petty.
Right.
That we're supposed to love Tom Petty.
Well,
and sometimes
like
you do
him.
And sometimes you don't. It's okay. Yeah. So, I love Earth, Wind, and Fire. You probably don't. It's okay.
I like them. They're fine. But then Wilbon has always taken the position. This is it. The black people don't play guitar. That is his absolute fallback position.
That's
I said,
stupid.
Wait a second.
Stupid.
Jimi Hendrix played guitar. You know, sure. I'll give you that.
I think Prince Rogers Nelson played a little guitar. Right. So.
And I showed you this video a couple of weeks back. We were talking about While My Guitar Gently Weeps, and it was
the
memorial for George
Harrison. The Prince solo.
Tom Petty is leading that. He's singing lead on that. And for those that have not seen it, I need to recommend it again. It is the single greatest guitar lead you'll ever see.
But the news
Prince.
With Tom Petty was that his death wasn't wildly exaggerated like Mark Twain, because it was on the way.
Yeah,
but it was reported he was dead, and then there had to be corrections saying he's
it.
On life support.
Just wait.
Yeah.
But also the timing with Las Vegas, it couldn't quite get the attention it deserved.
Exactly.
Because I think beyond his own songs, which as I was saying to Nigel earlier, I only really liked it like 1:30 in the morning after the second keg has been killed when I was in high school. But he had a big influence on other musicians. Right? Yeah. He's a huge influence. Yeah.
Again, not on A1 at the Washington Post.
It wasn't?
Second day in a row.
Is that right?
I thought Monty Hall should have been on A1.
Well, I think most people thought Monty Hall was already dead.
Yeah,
that one surprised
me. I get
me.
Monty Hall. I get not, that not being. I thought Tom Petty should be because he had more, I think, more influence.
There's a key
than
to it. There's a picture, but it's inside. But I think that's because all of the coverage of.
Yeah.
And you know the story. He's obviously one of the traveling Wilburys.
Yes.
You know the story about how that sort of happened?
No. I was not the world's biggest traveling Wilbury fan.
He was driving around with, I think, George Harrison, and they ran into Jeff Lynne on the road, and they said, hey, you want to go into the studio? So three of them went into the studio, and they started playing around. And Bob Dylan was in the studio next door. He said, Bob, you want to play with us? Yeah, sure. And then they said, let's get Roy, because Roy was roaming around. And the next thing you know,
they have an album.
They have an album.
In an hour.
Yeah, and it was.
And everybody makes money.
It's amazing. Yeah.
All right, I have to find out who Howard is.
Howard Hewitt?
Yes.
Lead singer of Shalimar?
Yeah.
Howard Hewitt is, that's the exact. Would you say he's comparable to Tom Petty?
Not to me, but but that's maybe the maybe
Wilbon was in his glory laughing at me.
I don't want to share how Ritchie I Googled
would,
that.
I think Lionel Richie would be more.
Well, of course, not only have I heard of Lionel Richie, I played a golf course where his house is on the third fairway. So how did you get
it?
You Googled Howard somebody?
Well, Howard R&B
okay.
and maybe other key terms.
Okay. We'll take a break.
You can say Negro, Michael. It's okay.
We're going to take a break.
It's a podcast.
We'll be back with Chelsea Janes is going to join us. We will play Tom Petty song, an old guy, and Chelsea Janes will join us to give us a preview of the Nats. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Tom Petty. In honor of the long life and entertainment, I am pretty sure that this song is on the soundtrack of the movie, American Beauty. Is that the name of the movie, American Beauty?
American Beauty, it might be.
American Beauty?
I know it was in Silence of the Lambs.
Oh, okay, then maybe that's maybe
that's
I'm confusing.
It's a song that the girl is playing in her car she gets kidnapped.
Yes, so maybe that's it.
It was off of their the debut album. And it's one of the biggest hits. They said there's a story that it's based on a girl who committed suicide at University of Florida. But Tom Petty was like,
he's
no,
from
that's,
Gainesville.
Yeah, so. He said, no, that's just an urban myth. It's just a song we wrote.
All right. Mm-hmm. So we're playing a little bit of that in honor of Tom Petty.
Now what was the song in American Beauty? Now I've got me thinking about that.
Yeah, we have to go back and see that. That's the best role that Kevin Spacey ever had.
It's phenomenal.
I mean, even better than Usual Suspects,
yes.
I think. I really do.
I agree.
Chelsea Janes of the Washington Post joins us now, and with what passes for a preview of the baseball playoffs, and we're only going to concentrate basically on the Nats, and there's only one question. There's more questions. There's only one first question, and it is Scherzer's hamstring. What do we know?
I mean, I think we know that it's okay. You know, it's not a huge problem. It's not going to knock him out of the playoffs, seemingly. There's nothing like that. But I think the main question is when he's able to start. Do you push him back from game one? Do you put him in game two? Do you wait all the way to game three? And I think there's a real chance they don't know the answer to that. quite yet, but as of right now, I think that he'll pitch in the NLDS, it seems, and I think that that, given, you know, all their injuries this year, is kind of enough. That's fine. That's good.
Oh, no. No, 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 no.
What's that?
No, I think he's got to go in game one.
Why?
Because I don't, maybe I'm wrong. Uh-huh. I told you Boz has made me look stupid on this already on Strasburg, but I think you want Scherzer in game one. I think the pressure, and I know they would go to Strasburg, and I know he's been great, but I think I've always thought there was a comfort level he had being the number two starter and not the number one starter. Do you disagree or agree or what?
No, I think you're totally right. You know, I think when Scherzer came in and started opening days and took that away, that was fine. It's, you know, Strasburg's not the center of attention, but I think that if you start him in game one and he loses, then you have Scherzer for game two, and it's like, okay, you know, that's fine. If you start somebody in game one and he loses, and then it's game two and Strasburg has to come back and then potentially pitch game five on regular rest, that's a whole lot more pressure than game one. So I think if you can get Scherzer spotted into game two, and, you know, then be on regular rest for five, that you're in really good shape.
See, this to me is a game one series. I have this great fear that if they lose game one, they're going to lose. I think the Cubs are really good.
They are.
The Cubs are the defending champions, and they've gotten better and better as the season went on. Is there a fear factor against the Cubs that they might have rather played someone else, or no?
I think the opposite. I think you want the Cubs. I mean, really? You know, you'll look at this in 5 days and say, oh, my God, what an idiotic thing to say, maybe. But, you know, they're not as good as they are last year. Their pitching is weaker. Those guys have gotten older in the rotation. They've been inconsistent. You know, it's just not – they don't have the same aura that they did last year. And I think, quite frankly, the Nats really have a Cubs thing. They really don't like that team. And I think that that's good. You know, the Nats just never seem to quite have that edge, but they don't like these guys. They really don't. And they're sick of the attention the Cubs get. I think everyone sort of is. And I think they're really kind of ready to...
Plus, their owner said the Nats will fold.
Their owner did say they'll
fold.
Yeah. The brother of the owner, right?
Yeah.
It's the brother of the owner. So here's not what would scare me. Here's what does scare me. In the last week or so, the Nats bullpen was terrible. Mm-hmm. Absolutely terrible. And I mean, notwithstanding what the color commentator on television said, that they have a championship bullpen, and I quote, I don't think they have a championship bullpen. And it looks to me like, and they can do this because they've got great hitting, but it looks to me, Chelsea, like 6 runs a game is pretty much what they need, that they don't want to go in to a 1-run game in the eighth. They don't want to do that. Can you allay my fears, or do you have the same fears?
You know, I just think this is the best bullpen they've had, and I know that that may not mean championship bullpen, and the standard's fairly low, but I do think they're in decent shape. I have a lot of trouble reading into the last week because it was kind of painful. I mean, they were bored. They've been bored all year, and I know that's not really an excuse, but it's just like the pinnacle of boredom for that last week and that last game. So, you know, Doolittle and Kinsler's kind of the one that worries you because if he can't get the ball down, he's going to get crushed. But, you know, outside of that, I do think they're deeper. And certainly, you know, a 1-run game in the eighth is going to be incredibly stressful for this team, and they're going to have to exercise steam in. But I think as stressful 1-run eighth inning October innings go, these might be the ones you actually think they can get through.
Yeah.
But again, like the standard is low by comparison. So I guess we'll have to see.
Bryce Harper hasn't hit the ball much. He's only been active, 15 at-bats or maybe less than that. But he hasn't hit, and now he's got 5 days to not hit again. You can play simulated games, but you're not getting major league pitching.
Right.
Well, I'm a little bit nervous about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're going in thinking that Bryce Harper is going to be MVP Bryce Harper and have it all together, that's not what's going to happen. I mean, the guy just hasn't played. But I guess the question at that point is, would you rather have Bryce Harper – you know, potentially figuring it out, or anybody else? I think you take a slightly weaker Bryce Harper, even just for like emotional kind of impact. And I think, you know, that last game Sunday, he actually had some pretty functional swings for the first time and some nice swings, some Bryce Harper swings. But as you say, now you get 4 days off to kind of lose that. So, you know, I don't think it's going to be, you know, crazy breakout Bryce right away, but I think that the potential for that is enough that you're still happy he's there, obviously, and that it can really change his year.
Last year, Joe Maddon, I always believed, got totally into Harper's head by walking him in that first series in April, late April or May, whenever it was, and also got into Ryan Zimmerman's head. because Ryan Zimmerman, I think, in a four-game series left 20 guys on and never delivered at all. So he was able to kill two birds with one stone. Are we expecting, is there a carryover for either of them against the Cubs? Are we expecting some sort of strategy from Madden that is just better, you know, that he hasn't unveiled at all and is just going to be better than any other manager all year?
I mean, I think you're always expecting something from him, and I don't necessarily mean that in a good way. You know, he's one of those guys that's always going to be tinkering with something, but I think you can't walk Harper right now. You've got to pitch to him, and I don't think Zimmerman's going to be the guy behind him in the lineup. So, you know, it sort of, like, makes that a moot point. I do think that there is something to the fact that the Cubs are a little bit in Zimmerman's head, but, you know, he's going to be at the bottom of a lineup that, you know, he's going to go Harper, probably Rendon, maybe Murphy, Zimmerman, and he's just not going to have to carry that same load. And I, you know, he has really bad numbers against everybody on the Cubs staff for really no good reason. So either you think, okay, they're in his head, that continues, or, you know, this is the time when there's not going to be, you know, all these guys walked in front of him where he finally kind of gets out of that. But either way, he doesn't have to be the guy, and I think that that's really important. And also that they just can't walk Bryce. They're going to have to pitch to him, and I think that that plays into the Nats' favor.
You don't think Zimmerman will follow him in the order? They'll put another righty in there.
Rendon,
Rendon
hits third. That's the guy.
So it's Rendon. So Rendon's Harper will hit second.
The whole thing.
Yeah, Rendon.
Yeah.
And so then
that's
Murphy hits
doing.
Fourth.
So, yeah,
right, they go lefty-righty, lefty-righty.
That's what he's been doing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. Harper hit second last year in October, too, which people forget. So, I mean, that's what it looks like, but I guess that could change, too.
I know this sounds – this is too long working with Wilbon, because Wilbon always badmouths the Cubs. And I'm terrified of Gio Gonzalez, because the last two starts – he had like 65 pitches in the second inning.
Yeah.
And I'm terrified of Tanner Roark now. I mean, consistently nothing all the last half of this season, and he was a really good pitcher last year.
Last two starts weren't great.
Do
but
we
he was
worry?
Pretty good second inning.
Do we worry what?
I mean, I think you always worry about Gio. You just have to. He's never, you know, even this year, it's always been a little bit of an adventure. He's just been better at adventure. So, you know, but I again, like, Sunday for me gets completely thrown out the window. Gio looked really sick. He didn't want to admit it. He clearly lost some weight. He clearly really wasn't there mentally. And I just, like, I don't read a lot into that. But I think if Matt Wieters is behind the plate and Gio is healthy and, you know, the stage doesn't get to him, and those are all, you know, fairly substantial ifs, there's no reason to expect that he's going to be awful Gio. There really isn't. He's been good all year. He's been pretty consistent when he's had to focus, you know, when there's been motivation. Tanner is more of a wild card for me, particularly because he's going to be really fired up. I mean, he's from outside of Chicago. His family's always there. He wants these games. He wants to prove he belongs. So, you know, you just don't know if that's going to help or hurt. But when he's up in the zone, which is what happens when you're fired up, he gets crushed. And, I think it's probably not as simple as that, but you just hope that he can kind of channel it. And I think if he gets off to a good start in that game, he'll be fine. I think if he enters, you know, in the first, gets runners on, and all of a sudden a run or two scores, then you might be in a little bit of trouble. And for him, I think that first inning is a huge, huge deal.
Yeah, he's become the worst of all worlds. He's become Strasburg in the first inning, giving up a lot of hits, and then has a pitch count by the fourth inning of 75, and it becomes Gio at that point. So I mean, if I'm them, I don't really want to pitch him.
You just need five innings from either of those guys.
That's right.
Just five.
Well, then you count on a bullpen.
Well, then you go Albers, Kinsler. You're fine.
Matt Albers.
He's been their best pitcher all year.
I know.
He's been their best pitcher all year.
I can't. FP Santangelo, and I'm directly quoting him from the game the other night, which you wouldn't have seen or heard because you were probably working, said that Michael A. Taylor is the team MVP. What are you talking about, right? I mean, how about Rendon and Zimmerman and Murphy? Are they not the team MVPs ahead of Michael A. Taylor?
Yeah, I mean, I think I would disagree, but if there's like a Michael A. Taylor point to be made, which is that, like, quietly he's actually turned into a really productive hitter, doesn't strike out all the time, and is probably a 2020 lock for 5 or 10 years. Like,
very
he is an actual really good baseball player. I don't think he is the best player or most valuable player on the team, but you could look at the fact that they lost Eden early and say, like, look how important it is that he finally figured this out, because you don't have a hole in the lineup this year. So I wouldn't agree, but that's not to say that there's not something there, because I think he has quietly actually been a fairly important piece of this, and just because he's just been better. He finally got better.
So you're much more optimistic than I am. So you think they will, I take it you think they'll beat the Cubs.
I have no idea. I wish I could say. I am convinced it's going to go five games, and that's all I know. But I think that they have a better chance. I just feel like this is the best team they've had, and whatever that means in October, I guess we'll find out. But this is the best team they've had, and they're healthy for the most part. And I think that that's sort of all you can ask for, and then you just take your chances.
Okay. Thank you, Chelsea.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. I was going to ask her if she could get me a ticket for Saturday, but I felt that that was the wrong
tickets.
Way to go.
Tickets.
Yeah. I felt that asking Chelsea was the wrong way to go at that point. Although I intend to... Wilma's not even going to be there Friday.
I know, I still can't believe that.
I think everyone's lowered expectations is a really good thing, though, compared to the last year or so, which everyone has gone into the fall going, oh, this is great. Yeah. They're the best. They're going all the way. I think all these worries, all these lowered expectations is good.
Yeah. I get that the playoffs is a crapshoot. I understand that. But I think they're better prepared this year than they've ever been.
Would you not throw – I would throw Scherzer out there for one.
No.
I really – you wouldn't do it.
Nope. Give him an extra day. Because he's still there for 2-5. That's all I care about. Can he pitch game 5 on regular rest? That's all I care about. And the answer is yes, if he pitches game 2.
I'd still put him out for game 1. I would pull your team leaders aside and say, you get this guy 4 or 5 runs in the first 4 innings. He's not going more than 5. And then he comes back for game 5 where Wade Davis will shut us out and we'll lose by 2.
On that happy note.
By the way, I looked at the American Beauty soundtrack. American Girl, not on it. I think Lithuanian Girl was on there.
Lithuanian Girl?
Yeah, it's a famous song.
That was a big hit. Yes. All right, we'll get out of here. We will come back with email and a jingle. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
I arrived just the other day, a masculine child, extra large, they say. We come here at night, the big dogs, my friend, vacuum sealed lamb and shallots again. But in the other room sits an old man alone, counting numbers, not doting on me. Sad, he never ever dotes on me. And this old man strangely gives me his thumb. Can this arch fool really be that dumb? Pick me up, hold me, and teach me how to make money when I scream and whine. Gramps, like you, I love to scream and whine.
Lyrics by Scott in Columbia, Maryland. The really vocal by Joe Arrow, and that is really good.
It sounded great, too.
That's a Bootsy song. Before we get into the mailbag, I want to thank Jason Lockenfor of CBS Sports, Chelsea Janes of The Washington Post for coming on the show. Also like to thank our sponsors today, SeatGeek and Policy Genius. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of The Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Play. And if you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. From Paul Hahn. Hello, Mr. Tony and gang. Meet your newest, youngest, and smallest Laura Little, Ivy Hahn, an homage to my favorite basketball Hall of Famer not named David Aldridge, Bubba Chuck Allen Iverson.
Oh, yeah.
Side story, I once met D-A-H-O-F at said Hall of Fame. During his induction weekend, I got to shake his hand, my very own cherished David Aldridge moment. Sneaky tall, sneaky slim, the person I'm related to by marriage, gave birth to our daughter on Sunday, October 1st. Sadly, 10-1-17 isn't an interesting series of numbers, but it's sure easy to remember than one's daughter was born on the first of the month. Got any extra TK merchandise that's collecting dust that I can use for burp cloths? I don't know about that. They go to Bootsy. I know you guys are running a for-profit business, but selling gear that simply says Tony on them? Come on, man. What are we doing out here? Send me a box of those.
He is a great graphic designer, artist.
James Hahn?
Paul Hahn.
Paul Hahn. That's great. Paul, that's great to know.
Georgetown Prep Zone.
Oh, is that right? Georgetown Prep? Okay. From Susan. Good morning. While all the incredibly important license plate discussion, Tori put in the incredibly random fact about Virginia having the most vanity plates. In an important follow-up, Tony did not proceed with where did Tori learn this? How did she have this factoid in her pocket? And my parents had a set of plates that were one number apart at some point in my childhood. On thinking about that, I am now puzzled as to why we never brought two cars at once. They and particularly my dad has passed, so I'll never know. I can only presume the new plates were mandated by the state and dad just went and got license plates for both cars at once. How many colors of New York State plates can you remember? Well, there's blue and white and then there's the orange and blue or the New York State plates. Right. But how did you know that?
Because I went into some horrible place in Virginia to get some plates for my truck.
Right.
And there are all these plates on the walls with all the different names and configurations and lots of rules and regulations about what you can't do, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
Nothing too suggestive, et cetera.
Right.
And then I was talking to the person behind the counter, asking him about it, and he told me, and then I looked it up. Now, this was a few years ago. I don't know if Virginia still has the ranking, mm-hmm. but I Googled it, and it seemed to be true.
From Carl in Oswego, New York, in upstate New York, the moon set on Monday morning around 3:30 a.m., so you wouldn't be able to see it when you walked the dog at 5:30. You answered your own question as to why. The moon is almost full. A full moon means it's on the opposite side of the sky from the sun, so moon sets as sun rises. But since the full moon doesn't occur until Thursday, the moon set a couple of hours before the sun came up on Monday. Give it a couple of days, and the moon will be back where you expect it to be. From Paul Groutman in Elyra, Ohio. Hey, Galileo, the moon sets at 3:21 a.m. right now. Get out there with the hound earlier. From Mark Murphy in Kingston, Ontario. I took my dog out at halftime around 10:15 Eastern time here in Canada. She likes to go one more time. I think she'll be okay till morning, but the person I'm related to by marriage, 34 years, says I have to take her out. My dog, not my wife. Anyway, I found it. I looked up to the left just a little bit, and there it was, the moon. You could not find it because it's up here in Canada, to be more precise, over my house in Kingston, Ontario. Tell Michael it's about 60 degrees Fahrenheit. We use Celsius in Canada. Thank Trudeau's dad, my main man. And from Noah, our boy. There is a lot to digest from the show open. I'm not sure where to start. Tony was correct. We're in a waxing gibbous phase of the moon. The moon set on October 2nd at 3:34 a.m. The 3rd, today at 4:36 a.m., well after Mr. Tony was awake. On the 5th, the moon will be full and it will set at 6:45 a.m. and rise at 7:04 p.m. Tony was correct that the moon right now is far south, so like the winter sun, it can rise and set at a low angle. However, in a few days, it will be higher in the sky and set later in the morning. Remember, the moon does orbit the Earth, taking about 29.5 days to make a complete orbit around us, going from one full moon to the next. If anyone wants to learn more, NASA is sponsoring an international Observe the Moon Night October 28th. That's really good. We could get VIP parking.
Sure.
So now what must have happened is I didn't see the moon this morning. I went out last night with the dog relatively late for me, mm-hmm. and I must have seen the moon then. That's when I must have seen it and not this morning. But tomorrow morning, I will be able to see it. That's a two-hour time difference in 2 days for the moon.
Gets around. Trollop,
so to speak.
From Mike in Burke, Virginia. It's like a remake of My Fair Lady. The moon in June eludes the cranky loon. If you get it right, you can go to the Epsom races in a nice dress. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
Oh, you're a dog. Oh, he lives to do that to me. Now, see, y'all gonna send your letters of complaint to me. He started, not me. He made me laugh.